Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. What if you could capture the passion and the imagination of local entrepreneurs who are ready to solve problems and create wealth in their own communities? What if the way to do this has a lot less to do with initiating and motivating and a lot more to do with listening and resisting the urge to take over? Ernesto Ciroli is one of the world's leading experts on economic development. He started working in the field of international aid in Africa in 1971. He since worked in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, the United Kingdom, Latin America, and Asia in projects that promote local entrepreneurship and local self-determination. He's also the founder of the Ciroli Institute. And this morning, he was the guest at Morning Philip at the Garage in Rapid City. The event is co-sponsored by the NUMAD Group and the Bush Foundation. And he joins us now on the phone from Rapid City. Dr. Ciroli, welcome to In the Moment. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Now, you've lived so many places and visited and traveled the world, but you also have a South Dakota connection. Tell us a little bit about your
Absolutely.
Time in the state.
I was a visiting fellow with the South Dakota State University in Brookings in 95-96, and my six-month visit from at the time I lived in Australia, and my six-month visit has become a 21-year visit. So it was quite remarkable, really. After 6 months working in South Dakota with a group of supporters and friends, they created a 501c3 organization, and that sponsored my stay, and then I received a O-1 visa, which was a special merit visa, and I've been very honored about that visa, and which allowed my family to then stay in America with a green card, and lived and worked for 7 years between Sioux Falls and Minneapolis, and then the last 14 years we've been in California, in Sacramento. So it's been an absolutely extraordinary experience, and I tell that it's very easy to make superficial friends in California, but we are very close, and we still have board members from Minneapolis and South Dakota, and so it's been, we have made some very, very good friends with some very deep roots in the heartland.
Let's talk a little about this concept of enterprise facilitation. And I want to talk about what it is and what it means, you know, the lessons that people in South Dakota can glean from it. But let's go back into sort of those early days when you were part of these efforts to try to help people that aren't going very well. Tell me how you sort of evolved in your thinking about how do we help entrepreneurs, how do we help communities?
Yeah, my experiences in Africa when I worked in international aid were very negative, because we would arrive uninvited to tell local people what to do, and the local people had absolutely zero interest in getting these, Italians in Africa and these Frenchmen and these the English people in Africa telling them what to do. So they were not interested in working in our project, so we paid them to come and work in our projects. And until we had money, sometimes some of them would show up. But as soon as the money would run out, their project would completely disappear, would vanish from even the memory of those people. They were basically one of those relationships where, we thought we were doing great things. They took our money, and basically at the end there was nothing really done. And this is pretty common, by the way, and it's still happening that, you don't know who is exploiting whom. And it was very, very negative. And I had a different idea. I was inspired by different thinkers, and I came up with this suggestion. It was, why don't we for once shut up and listen to what the local people want to do? Why don't we work developing the other way around in a responsive way? And I was challenged as a student. I was doing my PhD, and I was challenged by academics and professors who said to me, those people are remote, rural, marginalized, they're away from markets. You cannot listen to them because they don't know how to help themselves. We had to tell them what to do. And I was inspired by some very good American thinkers, people like Carl Rogers, people like the growth American growth psychologist that I studied and admired. And those psychologists are saying, wait a moment, every single human being has a dream. The dream to improve himself, improve herself, improve their conditions. So I was absolutely adamant that everywhere right now in your community, this very moment, there is somebody who is dreaming to make some money, to become a better person, to be able to feed the family. And that the trick would be to find those people. And to find those people, you have to offer a free confidential service to entrepreneurs, to anybody who has a dream. And I was challenged, seriously challenged by my academics, by my professors, who said to me, we don't believe it, Ernesto, you have to prove it to us. You have to prove to us that right now you can go anywhere in any community and find these passionate people. And I spent 35 years of my life proving my professors wrong, because I have now helped establish a methodology, this enterprise facilitation, this free, confidential, caring, one-on-one, passionate service to local entrepreneurs that has generated 55,000 new businesses in 400 communities worldwide. Mm-hmm. And we're working all over the world without ever bringing ideas on what to do, but only a methodology on how to do it. So we shut up, listen to local people. If invited, we go to their houses, we sit at the kitchen table in their own language, in respect of their own culture. We employ people who are local people, and we train local people to become enterprise facilitator. The enterprise facilitator has no money to give, has no doesn't tell you what to do, simply says to you, why did you call me? I called you because I have this great passion for animals, for children, for plants, for computer software. I have a dream to feed myself and my family, transforming my talent into a money-making business. And but I don't know how to do it. I don't have enough money. I don't have experience. You know, how do you do that? And so the enterprise facilitator is somebody then who becomes your buddy, becomes your guide, your friend, your networker, and your counselor, and says to you, what can you do in the business? Can you make it? Can you sell it? Or can you look after the money? Nobody can do these three things equally well. Tell me what is your strength. Tell me what is your God-given talent. What do you love? And as soon as we know what the person loves, we know what the person hates. And we say to the person, okay, only do what you love, but we need to find somebody to sell your organic chicken. We need to find somebody to sell your software program. And we need to find somebody to help you with the finance. Would you like me to help you to find those people in your community? Because communities are chocolate boxes. They're full of extraordinary different tastes and flavors. And what the enterprise facilitator does is connect passions. We are connectors of passions. If you love to breed organic chicken and you are shy, you don't know how to sell your organic chicken, and you ask me, I'm going to find in your community somebody who loves to sell organic produce. And we are going to teach you how to pay the person on a commission basis. And then we are going to get you and your friend to understand that you need a financial manager that can help you with finance. We're going to find somebody retired in the community who has been playing golf for the last 5 years. The score has not improved. They get really bored. And you say, why don't you help these two girls who are producing phenomenal organic chicken, and now they're selling it to all the best restaurants, but they don't understand finances. Take 5% of the company and help them. So it's all about, it's per profit is hardcore business, is really hard-nosed business. But what we say is, form a team in your community, and you will be incredibly successful.
So what's wrong with those? Because you mentioned going to the kitchen table of somebody if you're invited. What's wrong with those organizations or those opportunities to have a community meeting or a public meeting and sort of invite people to come in? You've mentioned privacy and confidentiality. What's wrong with public meetings?
Entrepreneurs never speak up during public meetings because they don't want to tell people what they're going to do with their money. They're scared that the idea will be stolen, or they're scared to be ridiculed in public. So all planning, all plans in the world are made without the inputs of entrepreneurs. And I tell planners, and they get really irate, and I say to them that their gold standard community consultation doesn't work with entrepreneurs. Because the only way to find out what an entrepreneur wants to do is 100% confidentiality. So why would they, in a public meeting, tell everybody that they want to buy that derelict building in the main street because they want to set up a brewery in there? They are not going to tell in a public meeting because the owner of the building is in the public. And as soon as they tell them what they want to do, the price of the building will go up. So entrepreneurs are not stupid. They're not going to tell how to make money. Also, they don't, women entrepreneurs, they've been so ridiculed at home and abused that, when they cannot even tell their spouse what they want to do because the spouse tells them, oh, don't be stupid. Why would they go in a public meeting and tell everybody that they want to do something that has not been done before in the community? They would be laughed at. They don't want to be laughed at. They want to do it. So what we have discovered is that the civic leaders, the mayors, the chamber of commerce, they think they know what entrepreneurs want to do in their community, and we prove them wrong every time. Mm-hmm. In 6 months, we help people to do things that nobody knew before. Mm-hmm. So it's like going to a doctor. Listen, why would you go to speak to a doctor about your intimate problems if you thought that the doctor would speak to everybody in the community?
Right.
The doctor, the relationship has to be sacred. The confidentiality has to be absolute. It is only when the client tells us, okay, now you can tell people that I'm looking for a financial manager, that we go and find a financial manager for this business. But the relationship has to be confidential, has to be free. So the enterprise facilitators are always paid by a third party, a foundation, a city council. They're paid by maybe a corporation that wants to see the development of the city, an electric utility, a bank. That's how the enterprise facilitators work. Not charging the client because the clients are poor. By definition, if you want to start a business, because you don't have one.
Yeah.
So it has to be free, confidential, passionate, on your side, and has to be what we call on your side, helping you do what you love to do.
Are there trained enterprise facilitators in South Dakota, in this region?
Yes, and we have today we have seen Brenda, who's coming from Marion. Marion has had three enterprise facilitators, one after the other. They are, and they have basically, in Marion, they have full employment. Now they're working with the spouses of people who are working. Our enterprise facilitator in Marion was the one who helped the local farmers start the first ethanol plant. Was one of the biggest projects ever set up by an enterprise facilitator. Because these 30 farmers went to see him to say, we have a dream. And the dream is to set up an ethanol plant. And our enterprise facilitator worked with Brian for years for 2-3 years to set up this $30 million ethanol plant. So yes, some of the projects are small, but some of the projects that we facilitate are multi-million dollar projects. And we've been doing it now for 35 years, and we have proved that there is no geography to intelligence and passion. Everywhere, so, if you shut up and listen, you're going to find people with the dream to do something.
Yeah. So this is something that can apply in a rural, in a rural South Dakota setting, in a tribal setting. What are some of the opportunities that you see and some of the obstacles to sort of convincing people that this is a way to look at economic growth locally?
We don't have to convince the people at the grassroots. They know that. In fact, every time we go to a rural community and we say that we should shut up and listen to them, there are all these beaming smiles in the audience. The people that we have to convince are the people, the arrogant people, who believe that development is about bringing companies to the country.
Right.
They really believe that economic development is about trying to attract companies to South Dakota. And my point is that why don't you look after your own people first? And so, no, the problem is never the grassroots. The problem is the people who are running organization to say, you know, we know that here there is nothing. They cannot even see the beauty. They cannot even see what's here. And I feel that, you know, that really something that is mortifying. How is it possible that the richest country on earth has its own people believing that they are poor? To me, it's inconceivable. South Dakotans believe that they are isolated when they can have a truck delivering their goods to 500 million people between America, Canada, and Mexico. You can ship stuff by truck and you think you are isolated? I worked in Australia. You want to see isolation? I'm going to show you isolation. We had to export internationally everything the Australian grew. The New Zealanders are the most isolated people in the world, and they are competing with you guys for powdered milk. From New Zealand, they are a population of 2.5 million people competing with international markets. So there is no isolation in South Dakota. You are rich. You are rich beyond belief. There should be no talks about poverty. So how come that you have some of the poorest counties in the country? I don't think that it's about geography. I believe it's about self-belief. Mm-hmm. And it's about the leadership believing that the people of South Dakota have nothing to be concerned about. You very smart people. I set up a project in a community in South Dakota. I had a project in surrounding Huron, South Dakota. My greatest entrepreneur was from Yale, South Dakota, population 250 people. And in 6 months, I have helped this poor, broken-down guy. If Rolly Watson is hearing this from Huron, please, Wally, get in touch with me again. I'd like to hug you again. But we had a company set up that went from 0 to 23 employees in 2 years. So, you know, there is no poverty here. It's just in the mind. Let's help each other do beautifully what we love to do.
How do people find out more, people who are listening today? Where do they go next? Because our time is short, and I think people want to learn more about this.
I would like to put you in touch with the person who's organized my, and I would like him to give you a contact for me in South Dakota. Just a moment. Lori?
Yes, hello. You're on the air in the moment.
Thank you for interviewing Ernesto, and we look.
And our situation here is we're kind of running short on time. And my question to him was this: as we wrap up, how do people find out more about the work that he's doing and about enterprise facilitation? And he passed the phone to you. So, in a couple minutes left, can you tell us where people can make those connections?
Sure, the website. If you Google the website for Ernesto, as well as the book Ripple from Zambezi, would be two places to learn more and be in contact with the Ernesto's Institute.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for bringing him down. We really appreciate his time and your time as well.
Thanks so much.